The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. Welcome back. We missed you. How are you?
Boker Tov, I am back. Thank you very much. And I hope that those who are fasting today for Ta'anit Esther will have a meaningful fast as we head into Purim tomorrow. Unfortunately, I'm back, but not with good news. It all seems to be negative on the horizon, and in particular, just some local news, because we seem to be so focused on what's going on, particularly in the war in Ukraine. But there were some shots fired towards IDF forces yesterday, clashes with Palestinian riots near to Joseph's tomb in Nablus in Shechem. And this comes after the IDF actually killed two people in Balat and Kalandia refugee camps when the IDF went in there to try to apprehend people who they were seeking in connection with other attacks that had taken place. And during the time that they went into these refugee camps, two individuals were killed by the IDF. And these individuals appear to be quite so closely associated with Palestinian Islamic Jihad. The Palestinian Islamic Jihad have then called upon people to rise up, have threatened to revenge these deaths. Shots were fired in the area of Joseph's tomb. As we know, there are people who like to go and worship at Joseph's tomb. It's in a place that is not particularly safe, and so is generally under increased security surveillance. But we have been warned by Palestinian Islamic Jihad that there will be repercussions of the deaths, and that these deaths apparently will not go unnoticed, at least according to the claims by Palestinian Islamic Jihad. So, a little bit of tension as we head into the Purim holiday.
Mm. Never a good thing. Also talking about the situation in Ukraine, the Russian ambassador to Israel has requested an urgent meeting with the Speaker of Knesset.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, this really speaks in volumes to the ongoing middle-of-the-road path that Israel is trying to tread. We understand that Prime Minister Naftali Bennett has continued to be in constant contact with the president of Ukraine, President Zelensky, and with the president of Russia, President Putin, in an attempt to try to mediate between the two sides and in order to try to bring an end to the dreadful war that's taking place in Ukraine at the moment. It's been interesting to see how from the Ukrainian side, and particularly the local ambassador, the local Ukrainian ambassador to Israel, has been highly critical of Israel, not willing to be a little bit more harsh in its response to Russia. The Ukrainian ambassador to Israel saying Russia has a few tanks, a few aeroplanes, and a few anti-missile launches in Syria, and that really gives enough excuse for Israel to behave in the way that it's behaving against Russia, or not behaving against Russia. And I think that's the key issue, the key criticism that the Ukrainians have of Israel. Ironically, President Zelensky seems to be much more cooperative, and therein lies some of the issue around this particular request from the Russian ambassador to Israel. Anatoly Viktorov approached the Knesset speaker to ask for an urgent meeting with the Speaker of the Knesset today sometime. It is not clear whether that meeting will take place or not, but it seems to come against the backdrop of a possible address to the Knesset on Sunday, we understand, by President Zelensky of Ukraine. And he has requested to address the Knesset after a previous request to make an address to a gathering at Yad Vashem was actually turned down. Now, we understand that President Zelensky is using this tactic to try to appeal to people around the world in general to come to Ukraine support. But it's ironic how he's trying to appeal more specifically to the Jewish community. And we've seen that in so many different ways, how he's appealed to Jews around the world to come to the support of Ukraine, and in particular to criticize Russia, to do whatever they can in order to alienate Russia as a result of the war that's going on in Ukraine. We understand that President Zelensky wanted to address a meeting at Yad Vashem in order to try to address the Israeli people rather than to address lawmakers. Yad Vashem decided that they wanted to turn that down, that they weren't eager to have that particular gathering. They were a little afraid that the war in Ukraine might somehow be compared with the Shoah and what went on in the Shoah, bringing the link between the Ukrainian president to Yad Vashem, and they felt that that would not be appropriate. They didn't really want to be drawn into that particular situation, so they decided to turn that down. We understand that President Zelensky then requested a meeting with the Knesset in the same way as he addressed the U.S. Congress via Zoom a short while ago. As far as we understand it, that will go ahead on Sunday at 6 p.m. And I do understand that that Zoom call, that Zoom meeting between President Zelensky and the Knesset in Israel will also be made available to the general public. So I watch this space. As soon as I have more information about where the people can actually join in, I will allow you to publicize that information for people who might be interested to join. But we understand that coming on the back of that, Anatoly Viktorov has asked for a meeting today with the Speaker of the Knesset, and the fear is that he may well ask for President Putin to be allowed to address the Knesset. Now, that would be a very fascinating thing indeed, if that is his request. There are other people who think that his request is more about trying to cancel the meeting between Zelensky and the Knesset rather than to request a meeting with Putin. But this has really been fascinating as to all of the backwards and forwards going on between Ukraine and Russia and with Israel in the middle. And of course, Israel coming under some criticism, not only from Ukraine, but indeed from the United States as well, for not taking a more severe stance on Russia. But let's just make things quite clear that Israel has done an amazing amount, even so, to stand together with the rest of the world on the sanctions that are being applied to Russia. The latest story applies to Israeli, Portuguese, Russian citizen oligarch Roman Abramovich, who also is the owner of Chelsea Football Club, and a lot of controversy around his ownership of Chelsea Football Club. But apparently Abramovich had requested to leave his private plane in Israel indefinitely. This request was not granted. He was ultimately allowed to he was given a short time slot to park his jet at Ben Gurion Airport. Apparently he was on his way from, I think he was coming from London, and then he headed off to Turkey. Sorry, not from London. He came from Moscow originally, landed in Israel. He then returned back to Moscow, according to the reports, via a stop in Turkey. He is not quite sure really what to do at the moment, because obviously the oligarchs are all part of the sanctions program. And indeed, Israel has said that it will also comply with the sanctions on the oligarchs. Now, it's not quite clear how Abramovich fits into this, given that he's also an Israeli citizen, a major donor to many good causes in Israel, some of whom over the last week or two, in particular Yad Vashem, have suspended their partnership with him, even though he's donated tens of millions of dollars to that particular cause. But they feel at this particular time that it's not appropriate to be associated with him. So Israel is certainly trying to do whatever it can, even though at a governmental level, at least, and there is no formal criticism of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. And of course, on the other side, humanitarian-wise, Israel continues to do massive work. Apparently, so far, 4,000 Ukrainian immigrants have already made Israel their home over the past few weeks. Another 2,500 new immigrants, people who are entitled to claim Israeli citizenship under the law of return, due to arrive in Israel this week, in addition to the 25,000 non-Jewish immigrants, non-Jewish refugees, not immigrants, but refugees, who will be allowed to be in Israel. And of course, massive amounts of humanitarian aid, plane loads of goods and people and the field hospitals and Israeli consular teams all out in Romania, in Moldova, in Poland, on the borders, in Ukraine itself, still massive amounts of Israeli consular work going on in Lviv, in order to process the people who want to come to Israel, either those who are entitled to citizenship and indeed those who are not. So a huge amount of humanitarian work being done at the moment to try to help the refugee situation.
It's actually quite remarkable, because what I'm also seeing anecdotally is the number of Israeli citizens and people that I know that have simply got onto planes and gone to the region to do something to assist. So it's very clearly not just happening at a government and organizational level, but it's actually happening on the streets of Israel where people are getting involved. And it's remarkable to see. Remarkable.
It's remarkable how many people in our local community, people that I know of, who have got on a plane, people with some medical training, people who feel that they've got something to contribute, people who don't do this for their everyday living, but just feel that they want to make a difference, they want to make a contribution. You know, now is the time when people need help. Now is the time to get on a plane, to join some sort of a program, to join a group, and to go out there and to do whatever is possible on the ground. Absolutely.
Really, really incredible to see. Iran is reported to have carried out a massive cyber attack against the Israeli government website. So this happened not last night, the night before. We mentioned it with Rolene Marks. Do we know anything more about this story?
Well, some would say the plot thickens, or the thick plottens, whichever way you wish to look at it. But there is a massive amount of information that has now come out against the backdrop of that huge cyber attack. And in the first instance, there is quite a lot that has been written just over the last day or two over about a story that which Iran did report, and they did say that there'd been a fire that had broken out theoretically in a stockroom in western Iran, and they described it as a stockroom where motor oil and other flammable materials were stored in one of the support bases of the Revolutionary Guards. Now what we understand is that that base may well have housed hundreds of drones owned by the Iranian Revolutionary Guards. And we understand that those drones, hundreds of them, have been destroyed. And this is a story which has come out initially from a Lebanese television station, which is linked both to Hezbollah as well as to Iran, and then seems to have kind of caused a snowball effect, with a lot of other news agencies picking up the story and just embellishing it a little bit, adding a little bit more information each time. There was a story in Haaretz, and then there were a number of other Israeli media outlets that filled in on a few missing details here and a few missing details there. So it's not as if though they're just simply repeating the story and just regurgitating it. No, they're actually adding little pieces of information each time. So this is apparently something that has been well known out there for some time, an attack that took place last month. Now that the story has broken, it seems like everybody just wants to add a little bit more. And so we understand that this may well have been the reason, first of all, why Iran apparently carried out some sort of a missile attack on a site in Erbil, which was alleged to be a Mossad training base. Now, the Mossad clearly have not acknowledged this at all, and there is a lot of confusion and speculation that this may just simply be hot air, that the report that it's a Mossad training base may not be accurate, but they may just be using this in order to try and allow the public to see that the Iranians are taking action against Israel in light of that attack that took place against the drones and the number of drones that were actually destroyed in that particular attack. But the plot thickens even further, because there is a further report of an attempt by Israel to somehow infiltrate the hallowed site of the Fordow nuclear production plant. Now, Fordow is the second most important nuclear production facility in Iran, and that follows the Natanz facility, which is considered to be the biggest and the most important. But Fordow is important, and the reason that Fordow is important is, first of all, because it's located under that mountain, which is considered to be almost inaccessible, impenetrable, and by those who wish to try to penetrate it and to carry out attacks against the Iranian nuclear program. But more than that, Fordow apparently will be the location that Iran will be able to enrich its uranium up to the 90% level and above in the event that it wishes to produce a nuclear weapon. Now, there are reports that have come out that apparently the Mossad tried to recruit a member of Iran's centrifuge team at the Fordow nuclear facility. The Iranians have come out saying, we've caught a Mossadnik, we've caught Israel attempting to carry out an attack against Fordow. The modus operandi of trying to recruit a member of the team seems to be quite consistent with the way that the Mossad works. So even though there are some people who are trying to pour cold water over this particular attack and make nonsense of it, there could well be an element of truth in it. It's not clear whether, in fact, a Mossad agent was caught or an attempt by the Mossad to recruit somebody was in fact intercepted. But certainly the style of work seems to be quite consistent with something that the Mossad could and would do. So there's so much going on at the moment. And of course, Iran needs to be seen to be retaliating against these attempts by Israel to infiltrate. One of the things that I've said to many people, and I'm happy to say more publicly here, is that with the upcoming expected signing and re-entry to the nuclear agreement by the United States, it is clear to me, at least, that Israel will not stand on the sidelines and watch from a distance whatever might happen next, because we already know that within a few years, within a very short period of time, there will be a sunset on that particular agreement, that Iran will effectively be allowed to do whatever it likes, quite legitimately in terms of the agreement, even though at the moment, at least in the short term, Iran is supposedly subject to those supervision of the nuclear work that it does. And we are almost sure that even though it will be supervised, there will be a lot that goes on beneath the surface that will not be seen to the naked eye. But I'm sure that Israel will not stand by from a distance and watch. And I also feel quite sure that whatever Israel chooses to do will not necessarily be visible to the naked eye. In other words, we won't necessarily see explosions. We won't see airplanes in the air. We won't see missiles falling. We are unlikely to see that. It's all likely to be, under the surface, attempts by Israel to infiltrate from within. And this kind of a plot seems to be very much within what the Mossad would do, as far as I can make out from a very uneducated point of view, just simply surmising from the sidelines.
But very clearly, this is escalating, even if it's just bubbling beneath the surface. There's no doubt that the bubbles are becoming more frequent.
Definitely escalating, not only more frequent, but potentially even more greater in their volume. I think it's becoming a bigger and bigger issue. And of course, as we get closer to not only the potential signing of the nuclear agreement, but more importantly, to the clock ticking down to the sunset, this is going to become much, much more of an issue. We'll see it more frequently. It'll be more visible, and there's no doubt that the activity levels will be raised beyond anything that we've seen up until now.
Anthony Rath, thank you. As always, it is 8 o'clock. We'll catch you tomorrow morning at 7:45.